This program is part of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. For more shows like this, visit our website at cosmicpotato.com.
Fifty years ago, the world was introduced to the phenomenon that was Star Trek. Popular culture was changed forever, and eventually it became 6 television series and 13 motion pictures. People from all walks of life have been affected by it. Their lives have been affected by the lessons and the philosophies that they took away from it. This is the story of those fans. Interviews with individuals who love Star Trek and believe that their lives are better because of it. This is their prime direction. Hey guys, and welcome to the Prime Direction. This month's episode is an interview with a guy by the name of Bruce Finkley, and he is a professor at the University of Montevallo. And it's interesting because he was actually able to put together a college course that was centered around Star Trek. It taught about all kinds of different subjects, such as racism and gender and things like that, but use Star Trek as kind of the wraparound, kind of the glue that held all of that together. And students were actually able to watch episodes and watch movies and talk about the themes and talk about all of the things that happened in that episode that may affect our actual real world. So that was really interesting, and I was glad that I was able to discuss it with him. So that's what this episode is about. Now, before I start that episode, I want to tell you about another project that I'm working on and invite you to come and check that out. Over on the Simply Syndicated Network, which is the network where Rick does most of his shows. You'll know Rick as one of the frequent guests on Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk podcast. He does a lot of shows for Simply Syndicated, and this fall I'm going to be doing a show on there with him. And it's going to be called the Simply Syndicated Discovery After Show. And what it is, we take every episode of Star Trek Discovery from this fall, the new CBS All Access series that's coming in September, and we analyze it episode by episode, week by week. We talk about what we like, what we didn't like. We talk about the acting, the writing, the music, the special effects, all of that. Every episode, and it's going to be coming out every week. The show itself will air on Sundays on CBS All Access. New episodes of the podcast will be coming out by Tuesday or Wednesday of that week. So I want to invite you to go over to Simply Syndicated, check that out. There will be a feed there soon that you'll be able to go ahead and subscribe to. And so when the show actually starts, you'll get notifications. You'll know that it's there. There will be a Facebook page that you'll be able to like so that you can follow and find out when there's new episodes, all that kind of stuff. I'm really looking forward to doing that show, and I want to invite you guys to come over and check that out. And that's it for the things that I wanted to discuss here prior to the show. So with that said, let me just let you enjoy this interview with Bruce Finkley. Where are you from originally?
So, I have been raised in Columbiana, Alabama, and right now I live in Calera.
Okay.
And I teach at the University of Montevallo, so kind of all right here in central Alabama.
What subject do you teach at Montevallo?
I teach mass communication, primarily journalism courses, but my PhD was in a lot of media studies type of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so that's where, like, the Star Trek class I taught, I use that as my, you know, background for that.
Yeah.
And that was a really cool thing to do.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to ask you about that in a few minutes. But have you always worked in education?
No, I actually started my career as a TV newscast producer, and then ended up, I really wanted to teach, and I was like, I'd love to teach journalism, and so went to grad school, and the rest is history.
Yeah. Okay. Well, tell me what your earliest memory of Star Trek is.
I think my earliest memory is here. It used to come on Next Gen was syndicated on the WB back when there was the WB.
Right. Yeah.
And my bedtime was 9 o'clock, and that's what time Next Gen came on. And so my parents had given me this old black and white television that actually had like all the knobs on it, you know, like no buttons.
Right.
And so I would sit there and figure out how I could dim the brightness and adjust the contrast so that the picture was very, you know, it wasn't very bright, but I could see it really well.
Yeah.
But they couldn't see the light from the TV under my bedroom door. And so like my first memories of Star Trek are those nights where I would stay up that extra hour past bedtime secretly watching the Next Generation.
So if you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
32.
Oh, okay. Because I'm from Central Alabama as well. I grew up in Vinson, Alabama. And
okay, yeah, we've got some friends that live over there.
And so when you're telling me the WB and it comes on at 9 o'clock, I know about when you're talking about. You're talking about like the early 90s, and I was in high school at that time. I'm 40 now, so I was in high school at the time. So I was imagining, because I wasn't at the age where I had to worry about my parents knowing what what I was watching on TV at 9 o'clock. But what was it about? So you're talking about the Next Generation. That's the show that really got you into Star Trek, was the Next Generation.
Yeah, that's the one I started with.
Okay, what was it about that show that you think connected with you?
You know, I think it was just like I've always been kind of just a sci-fi person, and that was just something that it was cool. And we didn't have cable, we didn't have satellite.
Yeah.
And so like that was the best sci-fi that I had access to. And so that was just one of those things that I just thought it was the coolest show. Even if I watched it in black and white for years.
Right.
Because I never, you know, I was never up to watch it on the color television in the living room. So when I finally, you know, it was like a whole different experience when I finally got to watch it in color.
Well, when you started watching the show, do you remember about what season it was that you started watching?
Oh, gosh.
The only reason I ask is because a lot of kids didn't really connect with the first couple of seasons. Well, I mean, a lot of adults didn't connect with the first couple of seasons.
True.
But once you get into season 3 and 4, I could see a kid being a little more turned on to that.
Yeah, I can't remember any specific episodes. I think probably by the time like the series finale rolled around is when I finally was able to stay up and watch, because I remember when that was in color. So it was probably the last probably 2 or 3 seasons is when I, you know, first got hooked, and then it was, you know, trying, you know, spreading into DS9 and Voyager and all of that. So, it was probably kind of later in the Next Gen run.
So how big of a fan were you? Were you like a rabid fan, or was it just something that you just kind of liked?
I mean, it became, you know, I watched it all the time it was on, and it was hard for me to watch Deep Space Nine because they kept moving its time slot around.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I remember the very first toys that I ever got. Yeah, I got a Dr. Crusher action figure, and then I got Geordi.
Yeah.
And so those were my first two figures, and I remember getting the big DS9 runabout that they would, you know, that the figures could fit in.
Yeah.
Like, those were the first three things that I had, and since then, I mean, it was, you know, getting as many of the figures and the ships and all of that. Like, I love that aspect of it. And, you know, just watching everything I could at that point.
And that's interesting to me because a lot of the people that I talked to on this show were more fans of the original series when they were kids, and so I don't really get a lot of people on the show that collected Next Generation toys. So that's interesting to me because I was at that point a little too old for toys. Even though if you saw my den now, it's full of toys. But
I know I've got, like, in my office here, I've got a bunch of stuff, and then I've got Rubbermaid containers full of action figures and all types of stuff. So, Yeah, I was big into all of the collect and still am
Yeah.
into what I can get my hands on now.
Yeah, because at that time, you talk about like 92, 93, Star Trek was really making a lot more toys than they used to. Because back when the original
Oh, yeah.
series was on, toys weren't that big of a deal. It wasn't until I
Right.
think when Star Wars came out and they realized what the toys could be, how much money they could make off the toys, then when the next generation came around, they decided, hey, yeah, we can market this stuff.
Yeah.
So was your Star Trek fandom, a lot of kids when they're in school, they're afraid to let people know just how big of a Star Trek fan they are, how bullies can be. So was your Star Trek fandom something that you felt you could be proud of, or was it something that you kind of had to keep on the down low?
I never remember feeling like I had to hide it. It was just one of those things that it was something I loved. I mean, like all my family knew about it. I remember, we would go. My grandparents lived out of state, and so in the summers, like my grandmom, if she was channel surfing and saw that Star Trek was on, and I remember watching a lot of original series with her, she'd be like, "Oh, what's on?" And we'd go watch. But as far as like being picked on or anything about it, I never remember any experiences like that. It was always just kind of, that was my thing that I was really into, and everybody seemed cool with
Okay,
that.
well, that's good.
Yeah.
Did you get into any of the comics or the novels?
Big into the novels, and I haven't been able to read much like in the last year, but at one point I was like really caught up. And then kind of some into the comics, but not very much. But I really enjoy the novels, and when I get a chance to read them, I found there's a guy that has a flow chart of how to read like all of the post Nemesis
Yeah,
novels
yeah.
in order. And so whenever I sit down and I'm like, okay, I'm going to read another book, like I have to pull up the flow chart to figure out where I am, and I try not to skip. I try to read everything in order.
Yeah,
So.
because when I was reading them when I was in high school, you didn't have to worry about what order you read them in. They were just books, and you go and you pick one and read it. But
Right.
it's almost like they're trying to write a new season. So you have to if you you have to keep up in order if you want to know what's happening from book to book. And I think that really started with the I don't know if you ever read any of the New Frontier novels that Peter David wrote back in the
I read, I think, a couple of the first ones.
He did a series, and basically these stories are only contained in the novels. These characters only exist in the novels. They weren't carried over from
Right.
any of the shows or anything. So it was almost like he was writing his own series. And of course, Next Generation Deep Space Nine characters would show up from time to time and all that. But so they took that idea after Nemesis, and Deep Space Nine really did it before the Next Generation, where they had a novel series come out that took place
Yeah.
after the show. But and Michael Jan Friedman that wrote a couple of the at least a couple of those Next Gen books, I know he was a guest on this show a while back.
Oh,
So
really?
yeah, if you go back to one of the episodes, this is about a year ago, he I
Okay.
interviewed him on this show. So
Very
did
cool.
so you went back after you became a fan of Next Gen, you went back and watched some of the original series.
Yeah, and then it kind of became, because I knew about the original series, but it wasn't as easily accessible. And then, so I would pick up that when I could. And of course, everybody knew about Kirk and Spock and all of that. But it really took, it took me longer to, I guess, really be exposed to enough of that. When we would go visit my grandparents in the summer is when I remember watching probably the most of the original series, was up in North Carolina. And now, I love it because the BBC, they have it's I think it's Fridays and Mondays are like all Star Trek all day. And so I put it on, and I have a daughter that she's 3. But she knows what it is. She knows who they are. And she'll sit and watch the original series with me, which I think is so much fun. So
yeah.
She loves it.
There's one of the channels here in town. You guys may get it down there. It's one of the digital channels. It's kind of like in between the channels. And
yeah.
They run like all five series every night.
Is it like Hero TV or something Heroes, like that?
Maybe Heroes and Villains TV or something
Villains.
Like that.
Yeah.
So when did you start watching like the original series movies? Did you ever? I mean, I'm sure you've seen them. When do you remember getting into those?
Well, I guess probably the first one I ever watched was Star Trek IV.
Okay.
And just because that was kind of the one that I think everybody was the most familiar with.
They ran it on TV pretty much every year, so yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that was kind of like my entry point. And then it was, you know, once I realized, oh, I need to watch, you know, these couple in order for all that to make sense, it was going back and kind of catching up that way. But I think the Star Trek The Motion Picture was the last one of the original series movies that I ever saw. I think I started with two, with Wrath of Khan, and went through Undiscovered Country before I ever went back and watched the motion picture.
Yeah, the motion picture is not really something that I think a kid would be able to keep his attention with. I mean, a kid that's the only Star Trek that they had, you know, when it actually came out in 79, probably, but when you had a lot of other stuff to pick from, it's a little more. So you're a Next Generation fan, and I'm guessing when the series went off the air, you're probably about 12, something like that.
I would have been, well, no, I'd have been a little bit younger.
Okay. So it was 94. So, okay. So maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe
so I would have been nine. So, okay. Yeah. Close.
So when that show went off the air, and of course it had a great finale. Everybody loves the Next Generation finale.
But, I watched it earlier this week.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I was at work and, we just got a new building at work and they don't have our cable connected. And so I connected my TV to my computer and just pulled up Amazon Prime. And I was like, you know, I read something. Somebody had put something on Facebook, I think, about All Good Things. And I was like, you know, it's been a little while since I've watched All Good Things. So I turned that on and watched it. And that was, yeah, that's just one of those you could watch over and over.
Oh, yeah.
Over.
It's a solid episode. Yeah, especially I don't remember a lot of finales really bringing as much closure to a show as that, even though we knew we were going to get more, we were going to get a movie.
Yeah.
But it really wrapped up the series really well and even carried you all the way back to the premiere episode.
I think about all the series finales that do like the flash forward. And, you know, I think we always want to think about where do those characters end up? And so, it was very cool to see the future version, the present version, and the past version.
Yeah.
And kind of all, you know, tie that back together. I thought that was so, so cool.
Well, how'd you feel about the show going off, even though you knew that there was going to be a movie coming out in 6 months?
I think at the time, you know, just kind of the concept, you know, to a nine-year-old of the show's going to end really, I don't think, really computed.
Right.
Because we had, you know, you still had the reruns. You had all the merchandising, which to a nine-year-old, I mean, that was like the prime time for that. And then, you know, there was DS9 already. So I don't think I so much felt like, you know, I don't remember feeling sad. I remember feeling excitement for Voyager because I was like, oh, it's a new one.
Right.
But yeah, I think, you know, the series ended. We got the movie. And there was just so much Star Trek at that time that I never really – I don't remember kind of being upset that it was – I mean, I remember thinking the finale was awesome. But as far as, oh, man, there's no new episodes, I don't remember really how I felt about that. But I do remember being very excited for Voyager.
Well,
knowing that was the next thing in the pipeline.
How did you feel about Deep Space Nine when it started? I guess when that show started, you were probably around eight. So, how did that show? How did it do for an 8-year-old?
Well, it was one that they kept moving it around for us, and so it was harder for me to follow because, you know, you kind of pick up an episode or two here, and then, oh, time slot moved. And so, I mean, I always enjoyed it because it was Star Trek and it had the aliens and, you know, there were characters that I was familiar with. But it really was not until later going back and rewatching it and going, oh,
yeah,
now, you know, it all makes sense. And you can kind of view Deep Space Nine at the big picture level. Because, yeah, at the time, I never was able to see enough consistently to really get into it until I think kind of like maybe it was the last season or so, or maybe it was the last three seasons. I think it kind of settled on the time slot. Uh-huh. And so I was able to watch, you know, the Dominion War and all pretty much intact. And so it was really going back years later to try and fill in all the gaps from, okay, well, what I missed in season one and season three and all of that, that I kind of got bits and pieces of during its original run.
Yeah. And then you said that you were really looking forward to Voyager. Which series is your favorite?
I like them all for different things.
Right.
But to me, like, and I don't know if I would say it's my favorite, but Voyager always holds a special place for me because it was the first one that I went from episode one to the finale, like watched the whole thing in order, because, you know, but when Next Gen premiered, I was way too young.
Yeah.
And then Space Nine was so spotty for me being able to watch it in syndication. And so Voyager was the first time that I was able to sit for all 7 years and watch that whole journey.
Yeah.
And so for me, you know, like, I guess that's the one I kind of consider. Not that I don't know. Sometimes I've told people, I told my students, I was like, I feel like I grew up with Voyager because that was, you know, going through middle school and high school. And so like that was the series that was kind of with me during those times, which are, you know, so crazy for a preteen teenager.
Yeah.
And so like Voyager was my constant during those years. But yeah, I mean, if I had to pick favorites, I would probably say for me, it would be a tie between Next Gen and Voyager. Those are kind of my top two.
And that's kind of the way I am with Deep Space Nine, because Next Generation was the show that I fell in love with Star Trek with. But it started in 87, and in 87 I was 10 years old, so I didn't really get into it until I was around 13. And then and then Voyager, I started watching it from the beginning, but by the time it ended, I was married and had kids and didn't really have enough time to watch it. And this was before we had DVR and
right.
All that, you know. So, but Deep Space Nine was right there in the middle, and I watched that whole thing. The movies. How did you feel about the Next Generation movies, starting with Star Trek Generations? How did you like that movie?
I, you know, thinking back to, you know, watching it then, I was like, oh man, it was just cool to see a Star Trek, you know, Next Gen in movie format. And so, you know, I'll rewatch them all. I mean, I'll even throw Star Trek V in on occasion. I'm like, you know, it's like, you go this long time, you're like, I haven't watched that one. Let me throw it in. And Generations, I know it doesn't get a whole lot of love, but it's one of those that I think, you know, a lot of the visuals are really good. I think this story could have used some work. And of course I don't like the way that Kirk died at the end. But it's still one of those that if I come across it on TV, I'll watch it. And it's one of those two that I'm like, you know what? I just want to watch Generations. And so I'll pop it in and watch it too. And so, yeah, I mean, I like it.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that you can go back now and you can watch it and you can see the flaws. But when it first came out, I thought it was the greatest thing ever.
Such
a big Star Trek fan and I was getting to see these characters on the big screen. And you're like, the death of Captain Kirk and all of this kind of stuff. So after that, First Contact came out. No, by then you're probably, that would have been 97, I think.
Or 96. So I was 11.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was one, like, I remember when I got it on VHS, like, for the longest time, I could remember exactly how many times I had watched First Contact. And I think, like, once I got up into the 30s, I finally lost track. But yeah, it was one of those, I felt like it was firing on all cylinders. And it was one, I watched it the other day too. and you know, it kind of struck me. I was like, this movie is more than 20 years old now.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, the Borg felt so scary.
Yeah. They changed them a lot for that movie. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And just the whole concept of the Queen and, you know, her tempting Data and all of that. And plus it has time travel, which I love stories with time travel. And you get the new Enterprise, which was beautiful. And it was, yeah, I mean, to me, that is out of the four next gen movies, I think that one, you know, clearly is the best one of the bunch.
Yeah. What about Insurrection and Nemesis?
I mean, Insurrection to me is the weakest of them. Like, I think I like Generations better than I like Insurrection. I almost feel like the story was just too small. It was, you know, the locations were beautiful. And, you know, Insurrection often gets dubbed as, oh, it's just a double, you know, a two-parter episode that got told on the big screen.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I kind of feel like it, yeah, that there's some truth to that. And so, I mean, it's not my favorite.
I think they did some of that. They did some of that on purpose because, and looking back now, I think that there was a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, rewrites and all this kind of stuff. But yeah. I know that with First Contact being this big epic action set piece, they really wanted to slow it down for the next
right,
movie,
yeah.
You know, and make something. There was a lot of episodes that were a lot slower and focused on a race of people on a planet that's going through something that the Enterprise has to help them out of. And I think they mm-hmm. were going for that with the movie. Now, you know, like I said, there were things behind the scenes that happened that made it maybe not be as good as it could have, but, But I mean, I'm not saying that you're wrong about it being the weakest. I think it was the weakest. A lot of people want to say that Nemesis was the weakest, but I kind of like Nemesis.
You know? Me too.
Yeah.
Like I feel, and it kind of feels weird to say it because I know it gets a lot of hate.
Yeah.
But I really enjoy Nemesis.
Yeah.
I wish that it had not been what's his name, Stuart Baird was the director. I wish it hadn't been him. I wish they'd given it to Jonathan Frakes again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought Nemesis was a good, like, it's one I'll still watch today and enjoy. I just wish that it hadn't been the final movie for next gen, because clearly they were, you know, they thought they were going to get one more.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's kind of, to me, I think some of the hate for that movie comes from the fact that that was the end of the run for it. I think had we gotten the next film, Nemesis would have, you know, the fan reaction, especially even now, would be different.
Right.
Different to it, because I feel like it was setting up a lot of stuff that we just never got the follow through on, unless you read the novels or the comics.
Right, yeah.
And so that's, you know, and I think that's part of why I've enjoyed the post-Nemesis novels, is, you know, kind of picking up and going from there. But yeah, I enjoyed Nemesis. The special effects were good. And I remember, you know, that was one that, I mean, it felt big. And then even with Data's death, like that was one of those things that I think I had heard that he was going to die before I went and saw it. I can't remember for sure, but I remember being like sad about it, but not mad about it. Like so many were, especially back then when it came out. You know, in my mind, I was like, oh, well, he's downloaded into B4, and he's, you know, I was like, Data's just going to, you know, pop back up in his positronic net and, you know, off we go. So, I mean, it's just like, you know, it's just like Spock. No one in sci-fi ever really dies.
That's what I was about to say. We kind of already had the same thing happen with Spock. You know, they kill off a main character, and then but then they leave seeds at the end of the movie to lead you to believe that, whoa, maybe he'll come back.
Yeah. So,
well, even after all those films came out and were gone and we had been told there wouldn't be any more movies for a while, we still had Enterprise on the air. How did you feel about Enterprise?
So Enterprise was one that I was in high school when it premiered. And it, let's see, it, because it went off in, was it 04, 05? So that was, yeah. That got me through like halfway through college. And it was one where I thought the pilot was fantastic. Mm-hmm. But it really took, you know, those first two seasons were kind of hit or miss, but I still watched it all because I was like, it's Star Trek, I will watch it. And then I thought the third season was really good, where they did the Zindi arc for the entire season. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth season, to me, was amazing. And I think, you know, going into they did a lot of the little three-part story arcs. I thought that was really cool and interesting. And you finally got Manny Coto was showrunner for that final season. And I'm like, you know, if all of Enterprise could have been like the fourth season, I think it would have gotten all 7 years.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, it's one that, you know, I think to me watching it, and I remember at the time, I had a high school science teacher that she was also a Trekkie. And we would talk about Star Trek and, you know, like in between classes too. And I remember she and I would talk about how, you know, it seemed like the actors had kind of settled into their roles really quickly. And, you know, weren't kind of as wooden and stiff, as some of the first seasons of some of the other series. And so I really enjoyed Enterprise, and I remember the day that I went online and saw that it had been canceled. And I mean, it just felt like a punch to the gut. Because I, you know, in my mind I was like, oh, we're getting 7 years and that fourth season was, you know, just so awesome. And then to just kind of have the rug pulled out from under you. And then for it to end with the finale that it had, it was, you know, that was not really how I wanted it to go out from its.
Yeah, that's not how the actors wanted it to go out either. They were not. There was actually an article that came out about a week or so ago about that, because Brannon Braga, I believe, was the guy that wrote the script. And he wrote a lot of stuff for Next Gen and Deep Space Nine. He actually wrote the script for or helped write the script for a couple of the movies. And he wrote the script for that. And he said that on paper and in his mind, he was being clever. He was making the finale kind of an homage to the Next Generation. And
as they kept calling it a Valentine to the fans, both him and Rick.
Yeah, the actors did not like it at all. He said that Scott, it was the one time that he can remember Scott Bakula being mean to him. Because he's basically taking their finale and taking it away from them and giving it to another series, you know. So, yeah. But then I think they have some post-series novels now that kind of fix some of that.
They do. Yeah. They've got some novels that told story of the Romulan War. Oh, yeah, and, like, the first novel undoes Tripp's death, like, right away. And turns him, you know, it was all staged so that he could become an undercover agent and go spy on the Romulan Empire. And I think it was for the Warp 7 engine. So, they took care of that right away.
So, so I've been told, and you mentioned it earlier, that you've actually taught some college courses that involve Star Trek. So, tell me what a Star Trek college class would be about.
So I did, the class I did was last fall, and I did it as an elective course because I was like, it's the 50th anniversary. And I was like, I want to teach this class. And so, yeah, I was all excited for it. And then I sat down to actually like plan it out, and I got incredibly nervous. And I was like, you know, I love Star Trek so much, and I want this class to be so good that I think I kind of got intimidated almost. And I was like, oh, you know, what if I get in there and the students don't like it and all of this? But I ended up like I plotted out the whole thing, and the class was open to anybody, you know, all majors. And so I had this wide range of students that some of them were like diehard lifelong fans. Others never saw an episode of Star Trek until I showed one on the first night of class. And so it was, you know, we kind of ran the gamut on who we had and what their experiences were. But we took kind of like a theme of the week approach. And so we even started talking with, you know, like Trekkies and fandom. We watched the Trekkies documentary from the I think it was the 90s or early
2000s. It was 97 or 98, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Which, you know, there's a woman in that documentary that is obsessed with Brent Spiner. And the students were just like, that lady, did she ever meet? I was like, I don't know. I imagine there would be a restraining order because she was very, very obsessed. But we talked about that. We talked about fan films because that was when, you know, CBS had come out with the fan film. They called them guidelines, which were really just restrictions. And most of the students hadn't really kind of kept up with any of the fan film stuff. So I showed them the prelude to Axanar that was out there. You know, that one's only like 20 minutes long, but it's fantastic. And when it was over, the students were like, oh, where can we go to watch the rest? And I said, well, that gets us into tonight's topic. And so they, you know, they were just kind of shocked that all of that had gone on. But then we would go into, you know, like we'd pick a theme for the week, and I would pull episodes from like a variety of different, a variety of series so that we could kind of get a little sampler of all of them. So like we had a week about, you know, Star Trek and race. We had like Star Trek and class. What else did we have? Yeah. Ethics was a week. We did environmentalism for a week. We did, oh gosh, we did so much stuff. Oh, we did one about the Borg and like body horror and integrating technology into the body, which the students were like, oh, really? We hadn't thought of that until, you know, we go through it. We did a week on gender. And so we covered all these different topics, and they had like even the assignments were Star Trek themed. So like in a class where you used to have to write a journal, they were personal logs. If you had to write an essay, it was a mission report. And so, you know, we just had a lot of fun with it. And the students loved it. I think I had 18 in the class. And so I actually got to present about the experience of teaching that class at the Broadcast Education Association convention in Las Vegas back in April. I was part of a Star Trek panel out there. And so I got to present about how I taught the course and all. So it was a lot of fun, and it's something that I had so many students ask me when I was going to teach it again that I think I'm going to try and work it into our class rotation like every 2 or 3 years or so, just to get, you know, another group of students and fans in there, because a lot of the students had never talked about or thought about Star Trek on a deeper level. And, you know, on a metaphorical level and all of that, they were just kind of like, oh, we just kind of thought, oh, those aliens are cool. And so, you know, it was really cool to see it start to click for them. And some of the essay and log entries that they submitted, you know, they wrote some really good stuff. And so I was really impressed with the feedback and the interaction that I got with that class.
I think when I was going to Jeff State, and when I first got out of high school, which it would probably have been around 96 or so, they were teaching a Star Trek class at the time, but I had a full load, and I didn't have time to take it. But yeah, shoot, I'd almost want to, if you taught it again, I almost want to come down and enroll in Montevallo just to take that class. maybe I'll just audit the class.
Well, I will let know when it's on the course.
So let me ask you about some of the newer stuff. How do you feel about the Kelvin timeline movies, the new timeline, starting with the movie that came out in 2009, the J.J. Abrams film?
So in 2009, I was still working at the NBC station here in Birmingham, and my editor for my show was a lifelong Trekkie. And so he and I had already been talking about, you know, oh, what, you know, what do we think about this new movie and all this stuff. And he, I remember he was so worried that the film would just wipe out, you know, really be a reboot and wipe out the timeline. And so I told him one day, I was like, his name was Kyle. I was like, Kyle. And this was before, you know, before the movie premiered, I was like, in my mind, my headcanon for this is just going to be, it's an alternate timeline. And I was like, I'm already just going to classify it as that. That way I can go enjoy it and not have to think about, oh, they're destroying the franchise. And, you know, and then there's the scene in the movie where they're like, oh, we're an alternate timeline. I was like, okay, there we go. They have, you know, set it up. And so, you know, I've enjoyed all the new ones. And, you know, there's so many fans don't like them. In fact, in my Star Trek class, one of the units that we did was Star Trek and mythology. And for that week, I found this research article that was going through, like, breaking down the hero's journey through the 2009 film. And so that was on the syllabus that week we'd be showing it. And at the end of the first night, this one guy came back up and he handed me his copy of the syllabus. He was like, I can't take this class. And I was like, well, is something wrong? He was like, yeah, you're showing the 2009 film and I refuse to watch it. And I was like, well, we're going to discuss, you know, fans' reaction and all. He was like, I understand that, but I refuse to watch that film. And I was like, well, you can still take the course. And he was like, no, if you're showing it, I don't want to be here. I was like, oh, okay. At that point, I was like, it's not worth arguing about. But yeah, I've really enjoyed them. And, you know, I think you have to take the approach of, at the end of the day, we're talking about a TV series and movies. And so, you know, I'm not going to let, if they goof something up, I'm not going to let it ruin, you know, the pleasure that I have gotten from Star Trek for most of my life. And so, you know, if something doesn't quite jive or whatnot in the reboot in the Kelvin timeline, it doesn't really bother me. I feel like them bringing Spock from the Prime universe there kind of helps to solidify. I think without him, it would have felt more like a reboot. But you know, in my mind, and the way they rationalized it, I was like, it's an alternate timeline. It can be completely different. And so it doesn't bother me that much as like it does some fans that are just like, absolutely not. And granted, it looks different. The style is different. But I think, you know, you've also got to take into account, if we're going to attract new fans to the franchise, we've got to tell stories in new ways. And so, you know, because if everything was made with the same production values as, you know, the films in the 80s or the series in the 60s, people wouldn't look at it. And I think we'd be too distracted almost by, oh, look at all that. It just doesn't look like we would expect it to. And so, yeah, I think some fans just kind of, you know, for a series that has Vulcans that believe in infinite diversity and infinite combinations, we see a lot of fans that are very resistant to those infinite combinations of how things can unfold. And, you know, I really think that's part of the beauty of Star Trek is it can be anything. And I think there's a space for all of that within the franchise and within, you know, whatever timeline or universe it wants to take place in. So, yeah, I mean, the new films, I do think J.J. Abrams was a bit heavy on the lens flare for my taste. But I enjoy them. And I think, you know, I really hope they get to make a fourth one. I know it's kind of in limbo right now because Beyond didn't do as well as they had hoped. But I feel like Beyond felt the most Trek-ish, I guess, to me. I think, you know, they had kind of settled into the characters, and I really enjoyed Beyond. So I really hope that they get to continue, you know, at least make one more, because I know that they extended some of the contracts for Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto to do another one. And the fourth one will apparently involve some sort of time travel to bring back Kirk's dad.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm very intrigued by that. And I think, you know, looking just at Hollywood and where Chris Hemsworth was star-wise in 2009 versus where he is today, I think, you know, if that fourth one gets made, I think it'll do well with them bringing him back to play Kirk's dad again. So I really hope the fourth one gets a shot.
Yeah, and that's something that gets repeated a lot on this show, is that Beyond was the most Star Trek type story, because the first film, I liked the first film, but it felt like I was watching a Star Trek movie that was made by people that didn't really watch Star Trek that much.
they were just
using a lot of the tropes that you hear that are associated with Star Trek, and then the second movie was really wobbly. There were parts of it when I watched it the first time, I really liked it, but the more I watch it, the more I find wrong with it. Now, I love Benedict Cumberbatch as an actor, but I did not think that he should have been cast as Khan. I would have been fine with him being a villain in that movie. It just shouldn't have been Khan. They should have just made up
the... Well, and the way they handled the fact that he was Khan, but they kept, you know, J.J. Abrams and all of the writers were like, oh, no, it's not him. But we were kind of like, well, we all know it's supposed to be. And even they've come back now and said, yeah, we really should have handled that better. But I think it was, and I may butcher the name, Benicio del Toro, who was originally supposed to be Khan. I think if he had been the part, you know, a lot of the fan backlash of, well, how in the world does, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch turn into Ricardo Montalban? You know, I think if we had gotten Del Toro, would have been a completely different fan reaction. And I agree with you. I think Cumberbatch would have made, I mean, he made a good villain for the film, but I wish he hadn't been Khan.
Yeah.
And I feel like that whole movie was trying too hard to be Khan. Even, you know, how they reverse from Kirk yelling Khan to Spock yelling Khan. And so, you know, you get to that point in the film and I'm just like, oh, stop trying to, you know, think you're so clever at, oh, look, the same things are happening, but a little different. And what was funny was my wife went to see both the 2009 one with me and Into Darkness. And so I remember after we saw Into Darkness, I was like, what'd you think? And she was like, oh, I really liked it. And I was like, well, did you like it better than the 2009 film? And she was like, oh, I liked it way better than the 2009 film. And I was sitting there kind of going, I don't know, I kind of like 2009 better. Yeah. And then Beyond came out, and I'm just like, okay, there we go. Beyond. And, you know, you get Simon Pegg in there writing it, and he is a lifelong Star Trek fan.
Yeah.
And so I feel like, I agree. It's the most Star Trek-like of the films. So I really hope we get that fourth one.
Yeah, and I heard an interview with Patrick Stewart several years ago. It was before Into Darkness came out, and I think he was on the Nerdist podcast. And he said that he was having lunch with Brent Spiner, which is, you know, interesting to hear anyway, that Patrick Stewart and Brent Spiner are still hanging out. And so they're having lunch, and Benedict Cumberbatch comes into the whatever restaurant that they're in, you know, and he sees them, and he comes over, and he sits down, and he's talking to him, and he tells him, I've just been offered a major role in the new Star Trek film. And, oh, well, that's great. I'm glad to hear that. And he stops for a minute, and he pauses, and he says, will it ruin my career? it's like, why are you asking us this? do you think our careers have been ruined? So we're about a month away from the launch of Star Trek Discovery on CBS All Access. So you're looking forward to that show?
I am. Like, the closer we get, the more I find myself looking forward to it. It's one of those that when we first saw the new Klingon, I was just like, what is going on with the Klingon?
Yeah.
Which, you know, I was fine with, you know, Enterprise explained why original series Klingons didn't have the forehead ridges and all. They just looked so different and like such a departure. So at first I was like, I don't know. But, you know, the closer we get, the more excited that I'm getting. The only thing I'm not excited about is the fact that it's on CBS All Access and not just on television. Yeah. But I think, you know, from what I've seen and the interviews that I've read and all, I think they're really going to try and be true to Star Trek. And so I think it'll be interesting. I do kind of worry about, and I saw an article the other day that was talking about, like the violence and all in the show that like, I don't want it to be too dark. And so I know there've been some concerns about that, but I think, you know, I mean, again, there's a lot of backlash of how can this be 10 years before Kirk when it looks more advanced than Kirk? And I'm like, again, if they made a show with sets that looked like they were made in the 60s, people wouldn't watch. I mean, your diehard fans would watch, but you're not going to bring anybody new in. Right. And, you know, that's what we've got to do to keep the franchise going. And so, you know, and they've got a lot of people that do love Star Trek working on the show. And so I'm really thinking that, you know, they'll do a good job. And I hope that they do a good job, and I hope the show's successful because, you know, I bet if this show does not do well, who knows how long it'll be before they attempt to do Star Trek on television again. It could be, you know, we could have almost another, 10-12 year gap, and I, for one, don't really want to wait that long again.
Yeah, because especially if we don't get a fourth Star Trek movie. And then this show doesn't do well, then yeah, it'll be a while. And there's rumors going around already that they're working on some other stuff. But I imagine mm-hmm. that if people don't tune in and watch this one, that most of that stuff's not going to happen. And I worry about right. that when I look at some of these Facebook forums where people are complaining about the paywall that the show is behind. And I understand that. I mean, I don't want to pay $7 a month to watch it either, but mm-hmm. I will because it's Star Trek and I've already paid. Do you know how much money I've paid for Star Trek already? I mean, how many DVDs have I bought? How many VHS tapes did I buy when I was in high school?
Back when they would be $20
yeah,
a pop.
Yeah.
At least.
And, when I went to see Star Trek Beyond, in the theater, I took my wife and my two kids, and we saw it on the IMAX screen, and we paid for the 3D, and we bought popcorn and drinks. I dropped $75 to see that movie. You know, yeah. So I think $7 for, 15, 16 episodes, I'll probably be okay with.
Yeah. And I think I remember seeing somewhere where they talked about, like, they're splitting the season. Like, you know, you'll get 6 episodes, and then it'll be off for a couple months and then you get the last half. And so I'm trying to debate on like what I want to do. Like if I want to wait until there's more episodes out before I actually subscribe, I have to figure that out. Cause I know I'll certainly watch the 2 episode premiere that's going to air on CBS. But then I'm like, oh, I don't want to have those couple of months where I'm paying for All Access, but there's no episodes, so I got to figure out what I want to do.
Well, what they're
going to
do, they're going to show the first episode on CBS. The second episode is going to be on CBS All Access, but they're going to make it available as soon as the first one is over.
So,
one way that I know of that you can get around paying for it if you want to wait, because you're talking about, even if they split the season, you're talking about 7 or 8 episodes before they do that.
Yeah.
So if you wait 8 weeks and then sign up for CBS All Access, you get a free week. You get your first week free.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may get a month for free, but I think it's a week. And
I saw they have a deal going now where you can get a month for free, but it's the month before the show starts.
Really?
And I was like, well, that's not the month I want.
Well,
free.
Usually it's kind of like Netflix. They just give you your first month for free. And so if you wanted to wait until the whole thing was up there and then subscribe, and then you could watch the whole thing in a couple of days or whatever and then unsubscribe it.
Because I have a feeling with the kind of season-long story arc, I'm going to want to sit and be able to watch, you know, 3, 4, 5 episodes in a row.
Yeah.
Just to kind of get more of a cinematic experience with it. So, you know, I think, I mean, unless that first episode just completely completely knocks my socks off, I'm going to try my best to wait a little while so that then I can go and say, okay, now there's four episodes or five episodes, and sit down and just binge them all at one time.
That's kind of the way we've been trained to watch TV now, because everything is so bingeable, you know, especially with like the Marvel stuff that's coming on Netflix. They release the entire season at once, so you can binge it. And all that. So,
and if CBS would go ahead and release the whole season, I would give them my money right away.
Yeah, I'll definitely be watching it anyway, because I'm going to be doing a podcast that's going to analyze each episode
every week. I'll probably end up just going ahead and paying, because I know it's going to happen. I'm going to watch that first one and go, I can't wait. So I'll probably be right there along with you, watching them and just paying as we go.
Yeah, and it's $7 a month if you just skip a cup of coffee one morning. You've already paid.
What I spend on Star Trek stuff, you know, every month or two anyway. I'm like, really, $7 isn't that much.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I'll definitely get my money's worth out of it, because I'll probably sit and watch each episode a couple of times just to kind of soak it all in.
As a Star Trek fan, we're constantly exposed to little tidbits of philosophy, life lessons, and things like that. So what do you feel like Star Trek did for you that made your life better?
I mean, I think it just gave me this optimistic outlook for the future. Because, you know, Star Trek has always been set up as it is the future that we, you know, will grow into. And so I think that's probably the biggest thing for me, is just the sense of optimism that one day we're going to be bigger and better than all of these things that we see happening today. And so I think that's probably one of the biggest things. And then I think, you know, there's you know, plenty of quotes from the captains and other characters that are just kind of some nuggets that I kind of tuck away and will think about from time to time. Like there's the one from Captain Kirk about, you know, it's possible. Oh, now I'm going to butcher it now that I'm trying to say it off the top of my head. You know, about it's possible to, you know, not be able to make the right choice. It's not losing. It's just life.
Yeah.
Do everything right, but you still don't come out on top. And I think, like, that's one of those things that I see it and I'm like, that is true. And you know, I feel like there are so many life lessons in Star Trek, and just, you know, with issues of diversity, and, you know, everybody's different. Everybody, you know, we live in a world full of infinite diversity and infinite combinations. And, you know, if I claim to love that about Star Trek, but don't love that about the world and reality that I live in, you know, what type of disconnect is there? I think it teaches us about respecting all of that, even if you don't agree with it, because, you know, the ships encounter cultures that they don't agree with all the time. But, you know, learning to accept and work with people that are different from you, I think Star Trek teaches us that like no other show out there.
Well, so if people wanted to be able to find you online, where would they look?
Yes. Well, on Twitter, it's just my name, at Bruce Finkley. That's F as in Frank, Inklea. That last name has gotten butchered for generations.
Yeah.
The A throws everybody off. You can find me there. And that's probably like where I put the most Star Trek stuff out there. Folks are more than welcome to follow me on Facebook. Again, they just have to search my name, and I'll put stuff out there. But yeah, they can find me in any of those places, because I post about Star Trek stuff all the time. There's another professor at the University of Montevallo where I teach that when I started teaching the Star Trek class, he reached out to me and he was like, I am so jealous that I was getting to teach it. He was teaching a science fiction and politics class. I just think about how Star Trek, you know, I guess this kind of goes back to, you know, life lessons and all. You know, we have things in common with people. I never would have struck up a friendship with him had we not shared that shared love of Star Trek. But yeah, I just I just love it so much.
The Prime Direction is part of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. It can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and of course on our website at cosmicpotato.com. Please be sure to leave us a review wherever you find the show. That will go a long way toward helping other people find the podcast. Every fan has a story. If you would like to come on the show and tell me the story of your Star Trek fandom, send me an email at mail@cosmicpotato.com. Remember, there are a lot of people that want to be on the show, so please be patient, and I'll write back to you as soon as possible. Thank you for listening to the show. Be sure to look for more episodes as I continue to bring you more stories of Star Trek fans and their prime direction.